And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles Football Craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nueva Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario.
Yeah. Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affel drives forward. Affel scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. Bart Logan with you here today, back in the seat, as we are still a little bit shorthanded, but we've got a super sub of our own filling in for a Ralph Schudel, who will be taking the game off here. But we've got one of our regulars with us as well, Patrick Murphy. Pat, how you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I've got a flight tomorrow morning at 5:20 in the morning, so that's how I'm doing. We're going to keep this one short. Although, you know, those that are listening, obviously, it's going to be after the fact by that point, and they really don't care about me or any of us. They care about the crew, and so we'll get back to talking about that. Alex Stanek is going to be joining us as well. Alex, how are you, sir?
Doing well.
Awesome. And our own Mike Grella coming in as the super sub for Ralph Schudel. We've got Nathaniel Marhevka. Nathan, how you doing, sir?
Hey, Bart. I'm great. Today's my Friday, so I'm ecstatic.
Oh, that's good to hear. Well, we had a good weekend for the Columbus crew as they were able to get back to their winning ways last Saturday in Mapfre Stadium against the San Jose Earthquakes. Ending a four-game winless streak to get back on in the winning ledger. So we will recap that. A couple players getting their first goals in quite some time for Columbus, and it's good to see that sort of secondary scoring chipping in. But we'll also ask some questions of some of the, you know, regulars that have really entrenched themselves in this lineup. Artur and Giassi Zardes, we'll examine where they've been these past couple of games and if Columbus might have to, you know, have some other questions answered even as they're starting to add some depth. And then we'll, as always, keep you updated on all the other latest developments to save our beloved Columbus crew as MLS and Anthony Precourt Sports Ventures just continue to step on rakes like Sideshow Bob wherever they take a step. So we will update on that and then get you the preview for this weekend's game in Seattle. But first, Pat Murphy, let's take us back to Mapfre Stadium last Saturday. An important game, I think. You know, obviously any win in MLS, it's big. But for this team, going through what they've gone through these past, you know, four games, as we mentioned, winless, was this a must-win?
I think it's about as big of a, or as close to a must-win this early in the season as you can get. I don't want to go as far as saying that you know, it was a must-win, but given what we've talked about the last few weeks about how this team has performed well and, you know, not gotten the results, especially after the fast start that we saw in the first four games, you know, I think they needed to get back into the winning ways, as you put it. And obviously they did. You know, we can discuss whether or not we thought it was the best performance of the team, but, you know, they come out against a San Jose team, which I think we all agreed in one form or another they should beat. Harrison Offel, as you mentioned, gets on the board early, a guy who hadn't scored in quite some time, I think going all the way back to 2016, if I'm correct, late in that year. And it was a good play by Columbus, recognizing that they had the width on San Jose, got the ball wide quickly. I believe it was Milton Valenzuela to Pipa. Pipa plays Harrison out wide, and, you know, just a typical Harrison shot, just kind of rifles it in there. And he had a couple of other chances too that we can talk about, but that got them going. On the negative side, team gives up a goal again right before halftime, across from San Jose's attacking left-hand side. The forward, Hosen, I believe is how you pronounce his name, gets free at the back post. I thought that Lawless should have done a better job on that one. I know there was a little bit of debate, and we can touch on that if you guys want. But anyway, a free header, and, you know, once again, for the second week in a row, they're giving up a goal right before halftime, which you never want to do. But this time they are able to come back. I thought they played a pretty solid second half, creating chances, though San Jose did have some opportunities on the counter. But it's Mike Grella making his first appearance for the club, his first appearance since June 3rd of last year after dealing with not only a knee injury but complications to a knee injury. He's been working his way back, as we've touched on the last few weeks. Gets into the game, comes in the 65th minute for Nico Hansen. And I thought, all things considered, looked pretty good. Took on some guys, tried to get in behind the defense, looked like a guy who I expected to be a little bit more rusty at an MLS level, but comes in, does well, and then in the 84th minute gets a cross from Pedro Santos, an early cross that I think it was Erickson for San Jose kind of slid and missed. Grella sets himself up nicely and is able to tuck it in near post. A great way to kind of make his Cruz C debut, his return with a winning goal. And, it made the storylines pretty easy to write for that game from my perspective.
And one of the things we've seen during that kind of the struggle, the stretch, those that four-game stretch winless, is Crew getting punished on pretty much the only significant attempt they've conceded to the other team. This was another game where one shot on target for the opponents, one goal. And I think that's happened. Friend of the show, Andrew King, I think, broke down. I want to say it's happened in at least three or four of these past five games. But it was also nice. So that a bit of a concerning trend, but also nice to see Columbus be the beneficiary of a couple breaks. You mentioned, Patrick, the slide there from Erickson that was a little bit mistimed, but even on the lead up to the initial goal from Harrison Offal, there's a ball takes a kind of little bit of an odd bounce, and it's out there right to Milton Valenzuela, who finds Frederico Higuain and then leaves the ball off for Harrison Offal. Do we think that this is, just a case of maybe the luck correcting itself, or Columbus creating its own luck? They can't continue to get punished each time whenever they concede at one bad opportunity.
Well, I think that some of that's the system. I mean, I think the way that we play lends itself towards giving up chances like that. Now, some of the chances are just kind of unavoidable errors that just things kind of pile up. But I do think the system ends up creating really good opportunities from time to time for the other team. And I think last season we really benefited from an informed Zach Steffen, who was able to make some pretty ridiculous saves at times. I don't think Zach Steffen's in his best form ever right now, so I'm not sure that we're still seeing that, but hopefully he can find that again. I think in general, it is just kind of luck balancing itself out a little bit. I mean, I thought we were the better team, but I thought we were the better team at other points during the season when we didn't get three. I think this is just kind of correcting, and it's still early on too. So these things will kind of all balance out, come July and August. I don't think we'll be too worried about any positive or negative results from early on in the season. But I do think we're going to have, situations like that where you give up a kind of a fluke goal just because one player is getting pulled out of position or something like that throughout the year.
And, we mentioned, you guys mentioned earlier that this is a San Jose team that, you know, at least on paper, Columbus should be beating. They obviously took care of business Saturday. But, you know, we've also seen these past couple of weeks a few light tweaks for Greg Berhalter with the lineup. We've had Lalas Abubakar back in at the center back position on Saturday. And again, Nico Hansen there on the wing. And Nathan, I'm just curious what you think about in the tactical adjustments that Greg Berhalter has made these past couple of games, and you know whether we think that they might be settling on something that he's more comfortable with, or now with Mike Grell ostensibly back in the mix, we could still see some more changes maybe on a game-by-game basis.
Yeah, I would like to see more game-by-game. I think we saw a little bit here as far as offensively adapting to how San Jose was playing. Chris Wondolowski, as you know, when he plays defensively, he likes to drop in, you know, almost as a midfielder. He's very active. Hosen was pressing a lot, putting a lot of pressure on Will Trapp. And Wondolowski was marking out Artur for most of the game. I know, you know, we've talked on the channel a little bit about Artur, and we can bring him up a little bit later because he's kind of been off this season. But I think in this game particularly, he was totally marked out for a lot of it. So we saw Higuain dropping into midfield to help and build up, to help facilitate the attack. And I think we got some good combination play from that. There was a lot of nice overloads on the sides. Eriksen and Vakko on the other side are not great defenders, so we took advantage of that. Offal and Valenzuela were both very active as well. The awful goal was really nice. It was a breakdown from San Jose, though. Vakko was, I don't know where he was on the play. He should have been trying to defend. And Flo, who was their left back, he got sucked in when Nico Hansen moved inside. And instead of staying in his zone, he stuck with Hansen, and that left awful wide open. So there were some gifts from San Jose. I think that Crew needs to shore some things up defensively. You talked about how, you know, one shot on target, one goal. Well, what can we do to prevent that? Maybe not a ton, but there have been breakdowns this season defensively. And we've seen it from Lalas, we've seen it from Josh, we've seen it from Jonathan, a few players. But I think forward in the lines, there's been some issues as well. And that goal for me, I know Pat mentioned that Lalas kind of lost his man, but I think that Zardes was really, really slow to close down Yule at the start of that play. And Hansen came over to mark out Yule, and instead of staying in his man-oriented zone, he closed him down, and that left a lot of space for Youngworth, and he played a perfect pass. So how much can you do to prevent that, to stay totally locked down every 90 minutes? I don't know. I think you have to be able to allow maybe one goal a game.
Yeah, and it is difficult there when it seems like the chances, Columbus isn't giving up as many of those, you know, great chances, but they are getting punished. And we've talked about, you know, a little bit about the trade-offs that you have with Lalas Abubakar versus Josh Williams. Now we're seeing Gaston Saro. He's approaching fitness levels, although he's probably a little bit farther away, obviously, than Mike Grella was or is. But you look at, I think, some of the goals that we've seen conceded in these games, in these, you know, one-shot, quick turnover, one-goal games, you know, maybe come at the expense of a young player like Lalas Abubakar, but at the same time, you look at what the team has done, the production while he's been on the field next to Jonathan versus Josh Williams this season, and in just looking purely at the results, all four of the team's wins have been with Lalas Abubakar in the starting lineup. So I'm wondering, guys, do we think that this... is it really a competition here between Lalas, between Josh Williams for that other spot next to Jonathan? Or do you think that Greg Berhalter might, you know, look at the production that he's, the results they're getting with Lalas, and say, you know, he's a young player, he's going to make mistakes, but for some reason, you know, we're getting better results when he's in the lineup. So let's keep him in there.
I think that's something you definitely have to take into account. And I know that they look at a lot of different things when deciding on lineups, obviously, you know, how training is going that week and, you know, matchups and things like that. So, but I do think you have to think about that, you know, for whatever reason, they're getting results when Lala starts at center back and they haven't been with Josh. You know, it's a similar circumstance this week where, you know, you limit the other team to one really good opportunity and they're able to put it in similarly when Josh was in there. But, you know, for whatever reason, you're able to find a win. And, you know, you look at the second half, there's a couple challenges that Lalas makes that, you know, while potentially dangerous, I know there was, he makes a block at the top of the box and then slides to for another tackle. And, you know, sometimes when he goes down, it's almost like, uh-oh. But, you know, he tends to make those plays, you know, and Josh is a steady figure, obviously a leader back there. You know, you get that from him, but you've got to take kind of the good and the bad with both of them. And, you know, if you're going to give up one chance per game, you know, like they have these last few games, I think three of the last four, one really good chance. You know, I think Lalas does give you a little bit more of that, I'm going to make the big tackle at the right time, or at least potentially. Now, you know, that could also result in a penalty kick. We saw that when he slid on Chris Wondolowski, mm-hmm. though I think Wando was even saying that there wasn't any contact, which was nice of him. But, you know, those type of things are also going to happen with Lalas. So, you know, you're going to take the kind of big play tackle, I think, but you're also going to potentially give up something, whether it's, you know, him losing his man or, you know, him making a tackle that ends up in some sort of set piece, you know, or you're going to get a good game. I mean, you look back at the Toronto game at the beginning of the season, I thought that was his best game in a career uniform. So, you know, I like you said, I think he's a young player who's still learning when and where to kind of make those tackles. And, you know, you take that from him right now.
At the other end of the pitch, Giassi Zardes held to just one shot. That is a tie for his season low with that loss to Vancouver. Of course, he did find the back of the net on his one opportunity in that one. But I think it's pretty telling, at least what Greg Berhalter thought about his performance when, you know, all due respect to Adam John, but he's gotten plenty of criticism on this show. And when you're subbing in Giassi Zardes, your leading goal scorer in a tie game for Adam John to bring him in and thinking that he's going to bring some sort of boost or maybe that kick, it did end up leaving, you know, whether it was if he can be credited with, you know, being the catalyst for that Mike Grella goal, that might be a little bit of a stretch, but was scored with John on the pitch. And Zardes, again, he did score against New England, has 5 goals on the season, but it seemed to have cooled off a little bit after that really hot start with 3 goals in his first 2 games.
I think with Zardes, I think he was overplaying himself in the first few games. He was really outperforming himself, really. He was phenomenal, and I think he's maybe regressing back to the norm a little bit. If you look at his numbers, he's right on par with the top strikers in the league still.
Yeah, I agree with Nathaniel. I thought we were getting more than what we thought out of Giassi performance-wise to start the year. Obviously, you know, the goals early on, but even some of the stuff he was doing I thought was higher level than what we expected. You know, I think when you think of Giassi, you kind of question his touch a little bit. And in the first few games, I thought he was doing some really good things. And I think he will continue. I do think you're going to get, you know, games like this one where he's just not involved very much. Obviously he had the one chance, in the second half right in front of goal, that they looked at for a potential penalty kick. And it was hard to see on the replay, but it does look like he shanks it and there's no handball there. But you know, other than that, he wasn't involved as much in front of goal. Still active, I think, defensively in terms of, you know, putting the initial pressure on there. I know Nathaniel mentioned him not doing a great job on the goal, but you know, I think he does do that well. Works well with Higuain, but you know, you want him out there scoring goals and or at least creating dangerous chances. And you know, in this game, I didn't think he was active enough in front of the goal.
For what it is worth, though, still has three more goals than a certain Ola Kamara. So Columbus at least still looking, Greg Berhalter looking like he did a good bit of business, or at least reaffirming that theory that I think a lot of us share, that it might be the system more than the individual players within it producing the goals that we've seen from the striker position for Columbus since Greg Berhalter took the helm. I want to, though, look again at the winger position to kind of dive in a little bit more. We talked about Grella and really kind of the sort of storybook debut for him for Columbus, getting that goal in his first game back. I know, Patrick, you had a kind of chance to talk with him and Greg Berhalter a little bit after the game, and so I do want you to talk a little bit about some of their comments, but I also want to gauge from the rest of you guys what we think the addition of Grella means. Right now we've seen through 9 games three different players getting the start at wing. I think Pedro Santos, just by virtue of the amount of money you've got locked into him, is going to hold down one of those wing spots, whether it's on the left or right each game, maybe to be determined. But it looks like if Mike Grella, even if they continue to sort of ease him in, is going to make for a dynamic competition there for that opposite wing spot of Pedro.
Yeah, I think the Grella story is super interesting because, you know, at the end of 2016, he bangs knees with a guy, almost, I don't know about necessarily a routine, play, but not something you think is going to be very serious. Ends up being they chipped some of the cartilage off of in his knee, and they weren't able to figure it out for a while. So he's trying to play. They're trying to manage the pain. I think he ended up playing in the playoffs one game that year, and then I think he made 7 or 8 appearances to start 2016 or 2017 before they ended up shutting him down and he had surgery and whatnot, and then there were complications from that. So, you know, if we didn't have a Gaston Saro here in Columbus that had gone through, almost 2 years without being able to play soccer, this would be a remarkable, an even more remarkable comeback story. But, for him to work his way back, obviously New York didn't hold on to him. He was picked up by Colorado and then quickly traded to the Crew. The Crew's medical staff, he's given a lot of credit for working with him and having patience to get him ready before they throw him back out there. And then to go back out there and not only play the way he did, but score that goal was like you said, Bart, kind of a storybook ending. And, he talked a lot after the game just about how much he really likes this system and, it's one of the first times in his career that he's played with a group of guys that, are all good on the ball, and there's a lot of passing and movement, and if you get yourself open that you're going to receive a pass in a good position, which I thought was interesting given that he, played with some pretty good Red Bull teams and some teams over in Europe. But, I think he's a very interesting fit here. I still think there's a little bit more time before you maybe see him in more regular minutes. But obviously, a guy who can make an impact in one way or the other for this team.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Pat. I see Grella as, a super sub for a little bit. He's still going to take some time to, fully acclimate to the group. He has kind of just got, back on his feet, back playing after that bad injury. But we've seen Hansen and Martinez this year be uninspiring. They've done their job decently, but I think that's a position that we can definitely improve, and I see Grella as that player. He came on and I think he had 21 completed passes, team of the week performance, plus with the goal. That's more passes and more, it was also more challenges attempted than Martinez and Hansen have had in the last 5 games, either or. So that was a very active performance, and he was only out there for 25 mm-hmm. minutes. So I thought that was really impressive. He throws a lot of heart in it, and if he can continue that, he may make a big impact as the season goes forward.
Well, I also think he's a really versatile player. So you can see him on the wing, but if Berhalter does decide to go out and buy a winger, an expensive winger, you could have him be the backup to Zardes. I think he's potentially a good kind of plan B option, different from an Adam John. and different from a Giassi Zarda. So I would like to see him tried in that kind of role as well on a regular basis. Just see how he does as a nine. I do think he's going to see most of his minutes on the wing just because that's where the need is. But he's a player who could really fill a lot of different roles in this system. I even think he could potentially fill in for Higuain if he needed to play a little bit further forward than Higuain does, and kind of offer a look there as well. So he's somebody who can kind of be a little bit of everything in the attacking half of the field. So we'll have to see how that goes. But I also think it's important that fans kind of cool their jets on him a little bit. I know everybody's wanting to kind of hype him up because he had such a great debut. But he's not going to have a performance like that all the time, I don't think. And it's going to take him a long time to kind of reach full fitness. Knee injuries can take a very long time to recover from. And then once you're recovered, just getting your confidence back on that knee, you know, starting to kind of get the mental aspect of it as well as the physical down. I would be surprised if we were seeing him with 90 minutes before, you know, July maybe, or maybe June. But I don't think he's going to be a full starter for some time to come still, but someone who can definitely contribute going forward.
A few things I wanted to follow up that you said, Alex, a couple things I was thinking of anyway. First, Mike said after the game that he was surprised with how good he felt fitness-wise, and not even just that, but just getting back out there and playing. Obviously, it was only 25 minutes, but you know, good to hear. I think that you know he was surprised by that. But you mentioned, you know, if they end up buying somebody, and I think one of the things that Berhalter's done is he's wanted to wait and see what happens once Mike gets back. You know, kind of how he fits in. You know, what role he can provide, because if he can become that, you know, starting winger opposite Pedro and kind of cement himself there, then I think you can focus that money elsewhere. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, probably another forward. But if Grella becomes a regular starter at some point, then you've got two backups in Nico and Christian who can give you some things off the bench. And then I think you don't have to focus as much on going to buy someone. Now, you can find somebody to add more depth. Obviously, I think you do. But and then the other thing you said about him playing up top, you know, I think that would be interesting because you saw on the goal, and he's talked about this quite a bit actually this year, is his ability in front of goal and his composure. And you certainly saw that with the way he, you know, took his time to set that up and goes near post, seeing the keeper already leaning back post. He's a guy who, you know, I think he before this had 16 MLS goals, which isn't a ton, but playing out on the wing for New York, you know, you're not going to get nearly as many opportunities, I don't think, as you would if you were placed in front. So that would be interesting. Not something I'd thought of until you said that, Alex, but with a guy who has a bit of a nose for goal, you know, you might consider that, especially if, you know, when you get match congestion or if there's any sort of injury or whatnot, you know, and you need somebody up there or somebody in the middle to replace Higuain or whatnot. I think he could certainly be an option in other positions.
Well, and you mentioned those 16 goals, Patrick, but he was a kind of a late bloomer, at least by MLS standards. Only played three seasons with Red Bull, and as you mentioned earlier, that last year, 2017, was on the shelf, only three starts, eight total appearances. The injury obviously playing a big role in that, but so you look at the 16 goals and that coming over, you know, a pair of seasons, I think probably, you know, encouraging most wingers. I think, you know, outside of Justin Meerham, I don't think there are too many wingers that have played in a crew uniform that have put those numbers up at least consistently. But, you know, the question also comes is this is, Mike Grella is not a young player. He is coming back from an injury. And I think the point that you made, Alex, that people do need to kind of taper those expectations. And I think, you know, maybe Grella more than, you know, any individual or fan, as you'd alluded to, Patrick, you know, that he wasn't maybe quite so sure what he was getting into. He wanted to kind of run out there and go in there. But, I could see a player in his position after all that time up wanting to maybe overextend himself or putting himself out there and just because he wants to play. And so it'll be interesting to watch the Crew try to navigate and put him in there and put him in good situations, but keep in mind that you want to see him there for the length of the season. Looking at the midfield position, though, sticking around there, I did want to talk a little bit about, we have a question on Facebook about, you know, some of the midfielders and some of the lack of goal production we've seen this season. I think we all expected to see Artur take a pretty big step here in his second full season in Columbus. Obviously, he was bought, the big money signing over the winter. But through 9 games so far this season, not exactly disappointing, but he doesn't appear to have taken that step that I think a lot of us expected. Are we just getting too far ahead of ourselves, or is there a bit of room for concern here for the young Brazilian?
I don't know if I'd say concern. I do think he has not been below some of the performances, I guess, we saw last year. But, you know, like we talked about with Lawless, he's a young player. You know, we kind of forget that because of the way he plays. You know, he plays almost ahead of his age. But he is a young player. This is only his second season really getting full-time professional soccer on a regular basis. So, you know, I do think that he set the bar pretty high for himself after last season, and especially the latter half of last season. And, you know, he's coming to this season and you know, hasn't had the consistent performances, I think. You know, not as much time on the ball. His passing percentage hasn't always been as high as it was a year ago. You know, just things like that. I think, you know, I don't see them changing him out. I don't think that, you know, they're going to bring in Ricardo Clark on a full-time basis or anything like that. But I do think you can kind of look at his performances and ask some questions. But I did think that Saturday's performance was a bit better than some of the other ones. I thought he was more involved. I think he completed around 85% of his passage, which isn't great for a central midfielder. But, you know, it's not terrible either. So, you know, I think we'll see him continue to improve throughout the season and kind of ride the waves of his second MLS year.
Yeah, I think people need to remember, I mean, he's still a kid in a lot of ways. He's going to have ups and downs. It's just part of the game. I'm not worried about him at all. I think he's a really quality player. I'm not sure if the weather has anything to do with it as well. But you know, he's going to take time, and we're going to have to kind of be patient with him. We're going to have to be patient with Zach Steffen, with Lawless, you know, Christian Martinez. A lot of these guys, you know, they're going to have hills and valleys. It's just kind of the way things are going to go. So I'm kind of optimistic about the way he's been moving in general over the last, you know, 12 months that he's been with the club. But yeah, a little bit of a dip early on this season, but I'm sure he'll be fine the next couple months. And I think he's a really, really great talent. So hopefully we can keep him for at least a couple years.
Certainly will be another player that we'll be keeping at least in a Crew uniform for at least one more season. Frederico Higuain announced late last week that the club will extend him as a DP through the 2019 season. Of course, last year there were a lot of questions out. I believe it was around August when there were the first comments that Frederico put out about his potential future in MLS not being with Columbus. Then there was all the developments, and then suddenly in October he's re-signed through 2018, and then all the Save the Crew stuff and the potential relocation of the team. Frederico Higuain's gone on the record. He spoke, I think it was with ESPN or one of them, where he made the infamous, if somebody tries to do this in Argentina, maybe they die comment. And we see now that he, even though he ostensibly is committed to Columbus, wants to remain here in Columbus, he has re-signed for the 2019 season, which could conceivably be held in Austin. I don't think that's going to be the case, and I think it's a little bit telling, perhaps, about the prospects of Anthony Precourt moving this team that Frederico Higuain signed through 2019. I want to get your thoughts on it, the rest of the panel here. Good move for Columbus. I think a no-brainer. You don't get he's a talented player. It's not like you locked him up for 5 years or something until he's 40. I think going year by year for a player at this age is a pretty savvy strategy.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's fantastic. I'm not sure if I've said this on the podcast or not before, but I'm just going to come out and say it. I think Frederico Higuain is the legend of the club at this point. I think he is the most, you know, impactful player in the history of this team, you know, more than Guillermo, more than Brian McBride, more than Sturgeon, more than all these guys. I think he has had a bigger impact on this team than any other player. I think he's one of the highest quality players we've ever had. And I'm so glad that he's going to be here for another season. So glad that he is going to be here for the season after we've saved the crew. And yeah, I do wonder if maybe he would have dragged this out a little bit longer if he was thinking that maybe he would have to move to Austin. I don't know what the players know. I think they've been told very little throughout this whole process. But surely they're hearing bits and pieces, and I do wonder if Pipa thinks he's going to get one more year here at least, maybe more. So hopefully he stays as long as he can. He's probably my all-time favorite at this point. I just think he's a wonderful athlete. He really kind of embodies everything that we want this team to be. He's got a little bit of fire, but he's incredibly hardworking. One of the best kind of thinking players that I've ever seen. You know, he's always got a play in mind before it actually happens kind of stuff, a great vision. And yeah, I'm so happy to have him be here for 2019. And it'll be a great year. I can't wait.
I think the year-by-year thing's interesting because I think on one side you get the argument of with these aging players, you know, you don't want to lock them up too long. You want to, you know, have that flexibility that if they start that decline, you're not you know, committed to them for the long term. And, you know, it's something that Sir Alex Ferguson, I know, did at Manchester United for a long time when guys got over 30. I know plenty of other coaches have done it as well. But the flip side of that, and especially in a place like MLS, is you have kind of that uncertainty. And I know that was the issue last year. And part of the reason they wanted to get this done early, Pipa said that Greg and Anthony approached him about signing for 2019 right after the end of last season or near the end of last season. So I think they wanted to make sure they got this done before there was speculation and whatnot. And, you know, I think Pipa's enough of a pro that this doesn't affect his play, regardless of whether he has a contract for the next year or not. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, especially down the line, assuming Greg remains with the club and whatnot, if, you know, this becomes kind of the way they deal with older players and, you know, how it affects them. Because I think, you know, depending on the guy, it can go one way or the other. Obviously, it's worked fine with Pipa, but just an interesting thing. And I don't know if this is Greg's philosophy or if it just happened to work this way with Higuain.
It certainly is interesting and, you know, obviously – I think any point, that's such a hard position to replace, especially at anything that's any sort of, you know, any sort of reasonable thing without using DP money. Obviously, they're using DP money with Frederico, but just such a skillful position. But I do think it does bode well, among other things, even as an old player, as a player north of 35, I have a hard time believing that Frederico Higuain couldn't have, as a free agent, have signed with, you know, virtually every MLS club, that there wouldn't be a team looking for him in a starting role, you know, outside of the Atlantas with Miguel Almiron and, you know, Diego Valeri or, you know, folks of that caliber. I think most teams would gladly take Frederico Higuain for a year at 36. But the trade-off is as well, you know, if you're Frederico, I think I can see as well why you take the money now and take the extension now, because you don't know what could happen this year. You could get injured. You could have something happen. And to get that sort of security, I know he mentioned his family being one of the reasons, his three sons, that, you know, he wanted to make sure to get this deal done. But I think it does bode well for our chances of saving the crew. And a couple other developments happened on that front last week and early this week. And Alex Stanek, I'm hoping you might be able to kind of bring us up to date without taking, you know, maybe a first year 1L law class. Just what's the layman's update for the legal battle to save the crew?
So I don't think a whole lot has happened other than something that happened within an hour of us recording this, which was that a letter was published online that Major League Soccer's law firm, ProScour, however you say it, law firm in New York City, sent to the city of San Antonio, which was that whole Judge Wolf thing from way back when, if you guys remember that. If not, don't worry about it. Old history now, but basically the city of San Antonio was considering litigation against Major League Soccer for the secret Austin Clause, saying that San Antonio basically put up money to pursue a Major League Soccer team.
Purchase the stadium.
Yeah, not knowing that Major League Soccer had this agreement, secret agreement with another city in their immediate area, which would have basically made it impossible for San Antonio to ever get a team. So they released this letter that they sent to Judge Wolf, the, I think he's the Attorney General of San Antonio or something like that, right?
It's odd in Texas, basically judges, like that are kind of like county commissioners here, but a singular one. So you think of him as the county executive kind of.
Yeah. So he's a pretty powerful guy down there. And they sent a letter, I think it was a 3-page letter to him. And towards the end of this letter, and this letter was sent on November 17th, 2017, towards the end of this letter, it says, at this time, Mr. Precourt has not formally notified MLS of an intention to relocate his club to Austin, nor have the conditions that would need to be satisfied for any relocation been met. And so this was sent on November 17th, 2 days after one of the dates that Major League Soccer claims Anthony Precourt gave notice to the city of Columbus. So they said that they gave notice on October 17th and November 15th. And then they claim 2 days after November 15th that they still haven't given notice. So it kind of undermines their entire argument about this whole 6-month Art Modell time frame. So I think what Major League Soccer and Anthony Precourt were hoping would happen was that they would get to be able to claim that one of these dates was the real date, and then they would say, well, that 6-month window has already elapsed, so we don't have to hand over documents for discovery. Please leave us alone. And now it's looking like MLS admitted in the past that, no, those dates are BS. Don't pay any attention to those. So kind of an interesting development. I'm not a lawyer, so don't hold me to any of that. But that's my take from reading that, and very positive development, I think, and just a little bit earlier today, so very fun. Tomorrow should be fun.
So not to get too technical, but in the letter it does say that Precourt made no official action or request to Major League Soccer to move the team to Austin or San Antonio. So it doesn't say that he didn't tell the city of Columbus, the state of Ohio, that that's what he planned to do. It just says that he did not tell Major League Soccer formally. So I'm not sure what type of legal jargon that is. But Alex, or Pat, Bart, whoever, what do you think this means as far as the crew's potential move to Austin? You know, does this bust it? Does it say that they don't have real intentions? What do you think this means?
Well, the fact that it came out in November, you know, I think at that point, you know, you're a month from the announcement of a potential relocation. So, you know, I wouldn't have expected them to give any notice at that point to the league. now it, you know, it does, I think, and I agree with Alex, I do think it looks bad in the sense that, you know, of the Modell law, though I do think it's important to point out, like you did, Nathaniel, that it doesn't say anything about what they told Columbus. But, it's interesting because, and we were talking about this beforehand, you know, where does the league stand in terms of this whole thing at this point? And, you know, kind of where does this leak, so to speak, come from? And not to say that it necessarily came from the league or, you know, we don't know that at all, but, you know, we did start discussing kind of where the league's position might be in all of this. And I think obviously they supported Anthony at the beginning vocally, but, you know, things have not gone as planned. You know, obviously they haven't gotten a stadium where they wanted. They haven't gotten the support I think they were going to, they expected. Meanwhile, here in Columbus, you know, there's been a lot of progress made in terms of potential new stadium sites, other investors that are interested and whatnot. And so if you're the league and you're kind of reevaluating things here as they progress, you know, I assume you're starting to look at things in a slightly different, you know, frame of mind. Now, does that mean that you can do anything to force Anthony to sell? Obviously, you could put pressure on him. You know, I'm not sure how far they would go or could go, but I do think that, you know, something like this starts a conversation that eventually leads to where is the league's stance on this, and, you know, how much has it changed since the initial announcement and kind of the announcement by the league that they support Anthony to kind of do what he wants to in this situation.
And I've got a lot of thoughts on all this, but I will bring it back. It's a little bit, I always find it interesting if when you look at the MLS's and PSV's kind of response to the lawsuit, the idea they wanted it dismissed, and they had the brief that was filed maybe 2 weeks ago now, explaining all their different reasons, and more or less you could kind of sum up some of it as kind of the O.J. Simpson, where it's, we don't think any of this law applies to us. It's unconstitutional. It's too vague. But if it did, we provided notice back in October. And I think they, you know, obviously that's not even if it's, you know, the statute is officially the no owner of a professional sports team that uses a tax-supported facility for most of its home games, blah, 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 shall notify the, if they shall cease playing most of the games in the facility and begin playing most of its games elsewhere unless the owner enters into agreement with the political submission or gives the political subdivision in which the facility is located no less than 6 months advance notice of the owner's intention to cease playing most of its home games at the facility. So if MLS, regardless of what Anthony Precourt said to them, said to, you know, Columbus owners and stuff, this is the league saying that he hasn't satisfied it, that he hasn't provided notice to them. And so I think if you're if I'm a judge, and again, I'm not a lawyer either, but I just have such a hard time, you know, feeling if it's a really hard, if your league is saying right now that you haven't done that, why is it, you know, why am I possibly going to believe that you provided that formal notice? How can you provide formal notice that you're going to stop playing most of your games until you have another place set up? I mean, I don't think they have provided formal notice yet, in my personal opinion, but I know a couple lawyers that are also kind of on board with me there. So, to take this all back, and what I think is most interesting, and especially for San Antonio, if they are to get involved or, you know, remain involved, there was some noise back in the fall about San Antonio perhaps pursuing some litigation for the, you know, points that we mentioned, feeling like they may have been misled or defrauded. And I think, or you know, potential fraud, their district attorney, I believe, or prosecutor said, no, it was very dubious and unethical, maybe on MLS's part, but not criminal at this point. But if I don't know how there's any chance that Judge Brown here in Columbus and Franklin County can look at all this and then look at the MLS's other main defense for all this, which is to say, we are the owners. Anthony Precourt actually isn't the owner. And to say that their argument is that we've got such a novel, weird ownership structure that this doesn't apply to our league. And look at that and say, you know what? I'll just take that at face value, and I don't need to learn more about this league structure through discovery. I don't think there's any way you could that a judge is just going to take that at its face and say, you know what, go for it, because this MLS and Precourt, I kind of said it before the show and jokingly, but they're operating going through this like it's the Browns and it's the 1990s or something, and we don't live in 2018 and 2017 where the entire world is connected through social media and we can know exactly what's going on down in San Antonio in real time and exactly what's going on in Columbus in real time and exactly what's going on in Austin in real time, and these things that are just really, really easy and minor and easily disproven. You know, in this case, you've got an official letter to San Antonio that you don't think that you've provided actual notice yet, and yet they still keep going and think they could just pull it off and tell them whatever they want, and that just because they're MLS and they've got, I don't know, this great product that everyone's clamoring to be a part of, that they don't have to play by the rules. And it's I think it's gonna be. It's going to be fun. And then I think it comes down to, you know, I've said it a couple times, when do the rest of the owners say, hey, you know, this could be more trouble than it's worth. What are we opening ourselves up to? Even if the Save the Crew lawsuit doesn't work, what do we open ourselves up to by putting our ownership structure out there for CBA negotiations in 2019? Anything like that?
Well, you want to jump in, Nathaniel?
Yeah, sure. So I just saw on Twitter that Mikey Turner said 35 minutes ago that MLS attorneys did disclose this information, not Judge Wolf, just to clarify. So it was not coming from San Antonio. MLS's attorneys did disclose this information publicly. So question to you guys, why do you think they would do that?
I think that's a really interesting question. So I'm sure they're trying to protect Don Garber and protect kind of Major League Soccer itself from statements they had made to Judge Wolf that they are now mm-hmm. contradicting. And so they're just kind of coming out and saying, by the way, this is what we said. But at the same time, hypothetically, if the league wanted Anthony Precourt to sell, and Anthony Precourt did not want to sell, but Anthony Precourt also did not want to open his books, you could potentially see MLS saying, okay, well, let's just screw with Anthony Precourt's legal strategy and make him open his books, and then maybe he'll sell and we can get what we want. I'm not sure if that's what's happening. I would be surprised if Major League Soccer would kind of undermine one of their owners like that. But they forced out the owner of Chivas USA and made him sell. When they were really unhappy with him, they found a way to get him out and to end that whole experiment. So I don't know. And I know, you know, none of us are lawyers, but Mikey Turner is a lawyer. He's a sports lawyer in Seattle. And he said, so this probably throws out the Anthony Precourt / MLS argument that notice was given on either October 17 or November 15 out the window. So that's his take on things. And he's been pretty impartial on the whole thing. So that could potentially have pretty major ramifications for the discovery process. And the discovery process, of course, could have very major ramifications for us saving the crew. So very positive development, I think.
And, you know, not to, to remain on this, it will also be interesting to see what sort of implications that'll have. There was the motion a few weeks ago by City Attorney Zach Klein for a toll, basically to kind of pause that six-month period to give Columbus investors a chance to purchase. That was kind of premised, or that was filed in the case that a court had ruled, or the court had ruled that, hey, Anthony Precourt gave notice back in October because we would have been hitting that six-month mark. Actually, it was a couple weeks ago. So that will, you know, probably just negate if it's true, and if lawyers and the judge would read into that as, you know, notice has not yet been provided, that motion for the toll would probably be dismissed because that six-month clock hasn't started yet. And so that'll I think anything, there are a couple thing big takeaways. First of all this is going to take time. The legal system, if anyone's had, you know, any dealings with it, they know that there's one thing that the legal system is, and it's not expeditious. It's pretty slow moving, especially with lawsuits like this. But I think anything that takes more time and stretches this out bodes better for keeping the team in Columbus. That's just my 2 cents. But moving on, we also do want to hear from you folks out there in our wonderful followers. If you've got questions now, well, it's a little too late, but you can start tweeting at us this week, and we might catch you for next week. Just use the hashtag MRPod and add us at the Massive Report. You can also like us on Facebook and ask questions there on the Facebooks. And we do have a couple of questions from those that we will get into. Here's one of them, and we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but or we've talked about this kind of for a while, but will the Crew SC get another striker before the primary transfer window closes? We talked a little bit before the, you know, before this, that you know, we might come up with some of our ideas, but I want to get your guys' thoughts. Is Greg Berhalter going to be, you know, inclined to go after that extra striker, that extra attacking guy? Or is, you know, now maybe with Mike Grella reaching health, as you mentioned, Alex, maybe he's that extra option there at the number 9.
I still think they'll make a move. I don't know if it'll happen before the end of this window, because I think we forget how complicated it can be at times to land a player. You know, there's a lot of negotiations. Sometimes it's easy. I know they've had players in the past that have taken, you know, a few weeks to get a deal done, but I know they've also had players in the past that have taken, you know, a couple months or a good portion of a season that there's negotiation. Sometimes you have to go away and come back. Sometimes a situation will change and, you know, a younger player will start to emerge. I believe that's kind of what happened with Pedro Santos after he was coming off an injury, where a younger player started to emerge and they were able to work things out. Money. So, you know, I know they are actively looking for, you know, attacking help, whether that's a forward or a winger or whatnot. I think Greg wants some more options there. I know Greg wants some more options there. The timing, though, is the question. You know, can they get something done before the window? And also, you want to make sure you get a piece that in 5 months, you know, 6 months after the season, you're not sitting there trying to offload because, you know, it didn't work out. They want to do their homework and make sure that they get somebody who can come in and contribute and, you know, work with this team. You know, we've seen guys in the past, you know, only be here for a year or so. So, you know, the idea is that you not only make it work financially, but you make it work for the club in the future. And, you know, I think they will do that. Now, will you have to wait till the summer? Possibly. But, you know, I think if that means getting it right and working a deal that doesn't, you know, financially handcuff the club, then I think that's for the best. But I do think we'll see something at some point this season as they, you know, look to enhance And we've seen those, you know, just last year, like I mentioned with Pedro Santos, we've seen those moves benefit the team down the stretch run and whatnot before.
We've got a question on Twitter to keep it on Pedro Santos. This is from at Crucible. Nice pun there, buddy. Has Pedro become the mirror of the team? Inconsistent, at times dazzling, giving it away as often as serves a great ball? Or am I crazy? Both can be true.
I kind of agree. I feel like he's as defensively involved as Justin Merrim was. He's actually one of our leaders on the team in tackles, in ground duels. I don't think aerial duels. But he's been very active, both defensively, loose balls. You know, he's kind of a fighter like Justin Merrim was. Also like Justin Merrim, he has tendencies where he just kind of disappears. But like Justin Merrim, I think that that's partly through his positioning. He has a good positional sense. He's not always directly involved in the play, like we may see from Mo Trapp or Higuain. But it's his off-the-ball movements that I think really, really help this team out. And I think he's filled in that gap well for Justin Merrim, if not maybe even a little better in some spots. I think just we get the team a little more balanced on the other side and we'll be in good shape.
I think the big thing between Pedro and Justin is the goals. And I know that didn't specifically come up in the question, but I think, you know, when you thought of Justin these last few years, it was what he was contributing statistically. And, you know, I'm not sure you're going to see Pedro score nearly as much as Justin did. You know, he just, you know, obviously only one goal in you know, a little under a season, but, you know, he doesn't seem to have that knack for goals and even necessarily, you know, as many efforts on target or, you know, off target as Justin had. You know, Justin was a former striker at Michigan who came into MLS, you know, and converted to the wing, but still had that knack for going to goal, you know, not first all the time, but, you know, he definitely wanted to score. And I think Pedro is a little more facilitator type. He'll certainly look to shoot, but I'm not sure he's going to put as many into the net as Justin did. But I do think they, you know, have some similar traits as Nathaniel detailed.
Yeah, and I think that Pedro is just a different player, and I think people need to stop kind of trying to expect a Justin Merrim, you know, clone from him. I think that when we signed Pedro Santos, I think there was a real distinct improvement in the way the teams played. And I think that that's kind of continued in a lot of ways. I think before we had Pedro, Merrim was marked a lot of the time, but they would always double up on him. And so having Pedro Santos kind of freed not only Merrim, but also Higuain to kind of have a little bit more space, to kind of stretch things out a little bit. In a lot of ways, I almost feel like now Pedro is getting the treatment that Merrim got before we had Pedro Santos, which was, you know, people are doubling up on Pedro and they're leaving, you know, Christian Martinez or Nico Hansen, giving them a little bit more space to roam around. So I think we do need kind of another threat on that other wing in order for the system to work the way we want it to work. But hopefully we can get somebody like that. Or, you know, like we talked about earlier, maybe it's Grella. Maybe he's the guy. So we'll have to wait and see. But I almost hope they don't make a move right now. I want to see what Grella does. I've seen enough from Grella that I think he's maybe the guy. And so, you know, hold on to the money for a little bit longer and see how things go.
And I think real quick, just, you know, when I look at Pedro, I don't think he was ever, you know, obviously he came while Justin was here, but I don't think he was ever a like-for-like type of guy. You know, I think of Nico Hansen almost more as that similar style of player, obviously still young, so, you know, he's gonna have to develop to get anywhere near where Justin was. But even Justin would say at times last year that Nico was well further ahead than he was as a rookie, you know, so it'll be interesting to see where he develops. But I also think, like you said, Alex, I think Mike can give you some of the things Justin did, especially in front of goal, like we talked about earlier. I don't think you're going to get a replacement for Justin Merrim. You know, he did a lot of things. He was in the system for multiple years, which helped. He knew how to play it and how to play with Pipa and how to play with off of the striker that they like to have and whatnot. So, you know, to recapture that maybe this season is a little hard to ask, but you know, I think if anyone is probably a most similar comparison, I would say it was a young Nico Hansen.
Well, looking still at that striker position, specifically at Giassi Zardes, we got a question here on Twitter from Fox4Crew. Will Giassi be utilized more in the crossing game like we saw in the first couple? It does seem like even though you've had goals from really both of your wing backs or full backs within the last, you know, three or four games, with obviously Harrison Offal's one last Saturday and then Milton Valenzuela's a couple weeks ago, but it doesn't seem like the crossing game, which has been such a staple, especially those high crosses into the box looking for the head of a big number nine, have been there quite as often for this Columbus team here in the early going this season. Maybe that's teams putting all their bodies into the boxes. What do you guys take away from that? And do you think we'll see those crosses coming in the box more for Giassi Zardes?
Well, one of the things I think you can, and Nathaniel, you may have statistics on this, I don't know, or some thoughts on it, but I think the crosses have not been as good this year as they have been at least last year. And obviously you're crossing to a different style of player in Giassi, but if you look back at Milton, he's been inconsistent with his crosses at times, you know, and I think Milton's a very good player, but again, a young guy. And Harrison, you know, it's just oftentimes I think that Harrison is just hitting the ball into the box without really a ton of, you know, without much knowledge of where the runs are going and whatnot. And, you know, while that can sometimes be dangerous and lead to something, I think it's more dangerous if you're picking somebody out. And, you know, even this past week when he had space down there, a lot of times he's crossing with his head down and whatnot. You know, so I think that certainly plays a part. Because this team does play so many crosses, I think you obviously want those to be finding targets, whether that's in the air, whether that's on the ground, and I think that, you know, obviously helps you create more chances and better chances.
Yeah, for sure. We have seen a slight, I'm looking at the statistics right now, overall slight drop in crosses as far as the team goes. Milton Valenzuela is leading the team this year in crosses. And last season, Harrison Offal stayed about the same, averaging about a half to 0.6 completed crosses a game. But I think overall we've seen a little bit of a change as far as the whole team goes, though. We'll see a little bit more from Pedro Santos probably as the season goes on. Higuain has liked to play, I think, a little bit more to the flanks this season than we've seen him last year. But we have wingers crossing a little bit less, and, you know, Zardes is never going to be a target man like we want a certain Kamara to be. I think that's just how it is. We'll see a lot of those low crosses we saw Nico Hansen play, and that may just be the shape this year. Berhalter's changing the system a little bit, and it's going to have to develop.
Do you think part of it is just the fact that you've got new players that, I mean, you mentioned Harrison Offal, but you look at Zardes and you look at Milton, and then you look at the other winger positions, Pedro Santos, who's still relatively new, and then, I mean, a combination of Nico Hansen, Christian Martinez, and Mike Grella, you know, a lot of new faces as well in this system. So do you think maybe as the year goes on, as that chemistry gets established a bit more, we might see some more balls coming in from the flanks?
Yeah, I think so. And I think they continue to kind of tweak the style based on the guys they have this year. And I know Alex has mentioned it a couple times on previous podcasts that this system takes time for new guys to learn, and, you know, for guys to learn them and figure out the best way to use everybody. So, you know, that's why you've seen this team have some struggles early parts of the years, and then, you know, all but one season they figured it out and made a run. So, you know, not to say that that happens every year, but I think that, you know, you kind of see the trajectory of a Greg Berhalter team. You know, new players come in, they kind of start to adjust, they figure out the way that they want to play, and then by the second half of the year, you're starting to pick it up and really make a push for the playoffs. And, you know, I think we'd all like to see this team, you know, dominate from start to finish and, you know, have a supporter shield type of year and whatnot. And, you know, maybe that'll happen at some point, you know, once they get a little bit more settled and, you know, if they can go a year without having a ton of turnover, which is unlikely in MLS. But, you know, this team and the way the league's set up, it works out pretty well because they figure things out, it seems, and make that run at the right time.
Well, a team who's still looking to try to figure something out is the Seattle Sounders, right now dead last in the Western Conference and tied with Toronto. Boy, who would have thought that? The two teams in the MLS Cup Finals last year, right now 9 games in, nearly a third of the way through the season, last in each of their respective divisions. Toronto obviously was going for a run there in the CONCACAF Champions League. Fortunately lost on Michael Bradley failing them, putting in a vintage Michael Bradley World Cup qualifying performance. This is a Seattle team, that's still one of a team that I think has a lot of pride, but a team right now with some question marks up top. Jordan Morrison is out, for the foreseeable future. So Seattle team that's had so much star power and spent so much time is kind of, as one of the premier teams in this league that looks like it might be at least, on the surface on, you know, toward a downward trajectory and perhaps even, rebuilding. But still could be a tough matchup, and going out to Seattle, for Columbus is always, a challenge.
Here's my question for Seattle. I haven't really watched a whole lot of their games this year. Kristen Rodan has done really well, I think. He's been a great part of their team. And Nico Ladero has been really solid. But other than that, they've really lacked in any sort of, you know, offensive impetus at all. I think Will Bruin is their leading goal scorer, and if I recall, he has 2 goals on the season. And then after him, it's a few guys with 1. Obviously, they're not scoring goals, and correct me if you will, but I don't think Will Bruin is the guy that they want, you know, leading their team up front for a better part of the season. With Jordan Morris out, I think they have to bring somebody in if they want to be at all successful.
Yeah, I think the Jordan Morris injury, you know, really changed what they were able to do, at least to start the season. Obviously, Bart, you mentioned the Champions League. They had some focus on that, and I think that led to a slow start a little bit too, but didn't make it nearly as far as Toronto. But yeah, I mean, you know, you're relying on Clint Dempsey, who's obviously getting old, Chad Marshall, who's obviously getting old. I think, you know, just in general, some of the key pieces that have, you know, helped them make a run to 2 straight MLS Cup finals and win 1 are just starting to hit that point in their career, when, you know, still quality players for sure, but maybe not able to bring it at that same level week in and week out. You know, I think I've watched 2-ish of their games, and, you know, that's just kind of what I notice. It's slower than it used to be. You know, this used to be, you know, as much as I know people in Columbus don't like the Sounders and whatnot, this used to be a fun team to watch, and they're just not as much anymore. With that said, I think there's still enough firepower on this team to cause issues. You know, on any given night in MLS, obviously teams can do that, but I think that, you know, if they get things right, then they can figure things out, and especially if they make an addition like Nathaniel mentioned, and kind of replace Jordan Morris this year. But yeah, I, you know, it's a team that doesn't look to be moving in the right direction, but still, you know, just those names alone kind of worry me heading, as you mentioned, Bart, out to Seattle.
With a team in Seattle that's been struggling as much as it has been, and when you consider the fact that Columbus, I think, has played, I don't think any team has played more games here early in the season than the Crew. I know Seattle, as well as Toronto, in part because of those aforementioned CONCACAF World or Champions League runs, have not played as many games this season. Do you look at this as, you know, even though it's a road game, a tough environment early in the season, I don't want to say it's a game the Crew should win, because I think it's obviously a game the Crew should win. Is this a team game that you need to win as a playoff team, as a team that wants to make some noise, or is this maybe a trap game?
I don't know if I see it as either necessarily. I think, you know, anytime you go out on the road, it's difficult in MLS, especially traveling cross country. The team's going to leave Thursday, so they'll be out there. Yes, that's another factor. So, you know, it's and you, as you mentioned, it's a difficult place to play. They've had a little bit of success out there. You know, I think everyone thinks back to Greg's first year when Justin Merrim came in and saved the team late, but. You know, traditionally has been a difficult place to play for most teams. So, you know, I don't think you can call this a must win or a game they need to win. You know, like I said, I still think Seattle has some danger in them. And, you know, going on the road there, you know, now especially with their focus entirely on MLS, I expect it to be a difficult challenge for the Crew. You know, especially after two games at home, you've got to get back on the road. The first time I think you're going out to play a Western Conference team.
Absolutely, and I might have lost you a little bit there, Patrick, but I think I understand the sentiment. And Nathan, you know, mentioned for us here just five goals for Seattle so far this season, albeit they've only played in six matches, but you're not going anywhere. I think it's pretty the fact that they just even have a win with that goal record so far is pretty telling. And this Seattle team is a team, I think, for Columbus, that they should take care of business against. We'll get to the picks right here from the rest of the panel in a moment. But first, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, and online at oldnortharcade.com. If you're looking for a good place to watch the game while out in Seattle, Old North Arcade, that could be your spot. Again, www.oldnortharcade.com for more information. You can check out the draft list, all that good stuff. Now, what you've all been waiting for, picks. Patrick Murphy, why don't you lead us off? What's the result?
As I kind of alluded to, I don't have a good feeling about this. I know Seattle struggled, but you know, I know how the Crew have done in road games in the past. Especially out west, I'm feeling like a 2-1 Seattle win. I just, you know, given that the Crew haven't been able to string a bunch of wins together or results together, I just don't have a good feeling.
Ooh, Patrick Murphy going with the win for Seattle. It'd just be their second on the season. Nathan, I saw a little bit of a shrug there. What do you have?
I kind of agree with you. I see this as a tough challenge. I also see Columbus as a team that's struggling to find a lot of cohesion in the attacking third. And I don't totally like what I've seen up top. Maybe, you know, if Mike Rella pulls off another really great sub appearance, they'll get something. But we need to see more from Zardes. We need to see more from the opposing winger to Santos. And that's it. We need to see more from Santos, Higuain, and Archer in front of the net. And to be a little quicker and a little bit more ambitious. There's a lot of times in the past few games, like, just take a shot, you know, looking for that extra pass. So I want to see more things offensively. I don't see them getting on the scoreboard in Seattle. I think Seattle is going to try and lock it down. and they don't have a great offense either at the moment. So I see 1-0 for Seattle.
0-2 for Columbus, at least through our picks. Alex Stanek, I know you're with me on this one. Let's hear it.
Federico Higuain loves playing against Seattle in Seattle. I think a lot of our players are going to struggle on that turf, but Pipa's going to step it up. 2-1. Crew win.
2-1. I like to hear that. For what it's worth, I do think Columbus will get homered a little bit. They'll have a little bit of MLS magic out, and Clint Dempsey will probably, like, you know, do a two-footed studs up tackle into Jonathan or something, and Jonathan will end up going off with a red card. You know, vintage MLS. But I think that new hotness has worn off a little bit from Seattle. I think the pressure is going to catch up to them, and I think Columbus, you know, they go out there to Seattle. And they get a 3-1 win. I think the goals and the luck start showing up, even, you know, in a tough road environment. I think Columbus plays pretty stingily defensively, and they finally start getting some luck connecting on the other end. Giassi Zardes gets a couple, and I'm going to give one to Federico Higuain as well, a 3-1 win from Columbus. Any parting thoughts, gentlemen, or shall we wrap this bad boy up?
Just a reminder that this game is at 4 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday.
Yeah, so 4 o'clock
Eastern. People don't hear. Yeah, it is weird. People, I just don't want people tuning in on, you know, later on in the day expecting a West Coast game after a Cinco de Mayo party or something and, you know, realizing the Crew's already played.
Yep, it wouldn't be MLS if we didn't have a whole bunch of just really odd times in April and May, that's for sure. Well, that should about do it for this week. Gentlemen, a pleasure as always. Nathaniel, thank you for filling in.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Always good, and we'll be back next week. In the meantime, bye, buddies.